The marble bust of Cicero sat prominently in Thomas Jefferson's library, while George Washington kept a well-worn copy of Addison's Cato at his bedside. These weren't decorative flourishes or intellectual pretensions. They were windows into the minds that shaped a nation. The American Revolution wasn't simply a rejection of British tyranny. It was a conversation across millennia where ancient wisdom collided with Enlightenment ideals to forge something entirely new. Yet this classical foundation, so carefully cultivated, contained within it the seeds of both America's greatest achievements and its most profound failures. Revolutionary leaders lived and breathed ancient Greece and Rome. John and Abigail Adams corresponded as Lysander and Diana. Madison displayed Athena on his mantelpiece, while Jefferson designed Monticello after Ionic temples. Even their horses and enslaved people bore classical names. Jefferson's stables housed Carrick, Tacus, and Diomede, while enslaved individuals included Madison's Plato and Jefferson's Jupiter and Hercules. This immersion ran deeper than naming. Virtue appears roughly 6,000 times in founders' writings, more than freedom. But virtue meant something specific, actively placing common good above personal interest. This explains Washington's towering influence despite lacking eloquence or formal education. He embodied virtue through action. The revolutionary generation favored Rome over Greece, viewing Romans as practical and stable while considering Athenians turbulent. When admiring Greeks, they preferred disciplined Sparta to democratic Athens, a preference revealing deep anxieties about popular governance. George Washington's classical education was minimal. He spoke only English, read narrowly on farming and military affairs, and never traveled to Europe. Yet he grasped something essential. In colonial America's status-conscious society, acting Roman was the surest path to respect. His greatest classical role came reluctantly after devastating 1776 defeats forced him to abandon dreams of battlefield glory. Instead, he became America's Fabius, the Roman general who defeated Hannibal through patience, shadowing enemy forces, and attacking supply lines rather than dramatic confrontation. This strategy yielded its greatest bloodless victory when the British evacuated Philadelphia in June 1778 after French entry into the war changed their naval calculations. His most consequential Roman act came in spring 1783, when unpaid officers grew restless at Newburgh. Anonymous letters called for rebellion. Washington could have easily seized power, becoming America's Julius Caesar. Instead, he convened officers at the ironically named Temple of Virtue and invoked his personal honor. "I have never left your side one moment. My own military reputation is inseparably connected with that of the army." By rejecting dictatorship when it lay within his grasp, Washington established civilian control over military power, perhaps his greatest gift to the Republic. John Adams chose Conyers Middleton's Life of Cicero as his Harvard Prize book, beginning a lifelong devotion to the Roman orator he claimed almost by heart. Like Cicero, Adams was a new man, rising through rhetorical brilliance rather than noble birth. He read Cicero's speeches aloud nightly, finding that the sweetness and grandeur of his sounds provided both pleasure and health benefits. Thomas Jefferson emerged as America's most aesthetically minded early president, widely read, scientifically observant, musically talented, and architecturally brilliant. Unlike his predecessors, Jefferson favored Greek culture over Roman Stoicism. His devotion to Epicurean philosophy began in 1767. Happiness, the aim of life. Virtue, the foundation of happiness. Utility, the test of virtue. This philosophy may explain his reluctance to confront personal contradictions, particularly regarding slavery. James Madison, barely 5 feet tall, was nonetheless the best-informed man in America on principles of government. Princeton exposed him to Scottish Enlightenment thinking, encouraging a spirit of liberty and free inquiry. In Federalist 10, Madison challenged classical orthodoxy by arguing that factions were inevitable, so the solution was controlling their effects through competing interests. His innovative insight? Larger republics were more stable because diverse interests prevented any single faction from dominating.
Jefferson's Declaration of Independence stands as his singular literary achievement, perhaps the only piece of practical politics that is also theoretical politics and also great literature, as G.K. Chesterton observed. Unlike his typically verbose style, the Declaration features strong, plain prose because he considered it an appeal to the tribunal of the world. By replacing Locke's life, liberty, and estate with life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, Jefferson marginalized social class and transformed liberty from property protection to human flourishing. This phrase echoed through the 1848 Seneca Falls Declaration, Lincoln's Gettysburg Address, and Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech. The Constitutional Convention devised a new basis of republican government that didn't require virtue as its foundation. The resulting document contained no mention of virtue. Yet classical references manifested trundlingly in Southern slavery defenses. Charles Pinckney invoked Greece and Rome to justify bondage, claiming, "In all ages, one half mankind had been slaves." The convention chose expediency over moral clarity, passing the ethical burden to future generations who paid in blood during the Civil War. Madison and Hamilton's Federalist Papers, 85 essays written between October 1787 and August 1788, merged classical republican theory with modern political philosophy. Historian Peter Gay called this the most characteristic product of the American Enlightenment. Jefferson's 1800 election marked a turning point. His inaugural address championed equal rights and press freedom, but barely mentioned virtue. John Adams fled Washington at 4 a.m. on Inauguration Day, writing bitterly that he had exchanged honors and virtues for manure. Electoral winners attacked not just elites, but classicism itself. An Argus essay mocked Federalists who despised working men for not having snored through 4 years at Princeton. The Missouri Compromise of 1820 shook Jefferson, a fire bell in the night that awakened and filled me with terror. He called it an act of suicide and treason against the hopes of the world. Alexis de Tocqueville observed that Americans had abandoned classical models. Democratic peoples hold erudition in very low esteem and care little about what happened in Rome and Athens. The Industrial Revolution delivered the final blow. Steam-powered vessels on Western rivers exploded from 17 in 1817 to 727 by 1855. American colleges adapted. By 1831, a Yale speaker equated the steam engine with Cicero's orations. After the Civil War, classical education faded. Yale dropped Latin requirements in 1931. Harvard ceased Latin diplomas in 1961. The founders' classical education misled them on three critical issues: overestimating public virtue as a check on power, misunderstanding partisan politics as unnatural, and enshrining slavery through the Three-Fifths Compromise and fugitive slave provisions. Slavery's brutality exceeded plantation mythology. Washington, Jefferson, and Madison emerged from what historian Annette Gordon Reed calls a society built on and sustained by violence. Enslaved people faced toe amputations for escape attempts, salt brine pickling after floggings, and burning at the stake. Unlike Roman slavery, which offered paths to citizenship, American slavery created a permanent racial underclass with no legal recourse. Yet their greatest legacy was creating a system that could transcend their limitations. The Constitution's opening, "We the People," established that sovereignty resided with citizens, not states or institutions. As Madison reflected, "The censorial power is in the people over the government, and not in the government over the people." This principle enabled future generations to expand liberty and equality, working toward Jefferson's declaration that all men are created equal, even as Jefferson failed to embody these words. Their classical education built something unprecedented, a republic designed not for perfection, but for perpetual improvement, where each generation inherits both wisdom and failures, charged with bending that long arc toward justice.